Champions.
We are the best at sitting in a comfy chair and telling the entire sports world what they should have done and what they should be doing later. Putting it simply, all right, everybody, and with that awesome intro that, I really like that, but we're here. This is indeed Armchair Champions, and we're having a rotating door at co-host here. Today, we've got Evan. He was here on one of the past shows, but Alex is sick today. He was actually unable to do his show earlier this week. And so he wasn't able to do this show, obviously, but we're glad to have you, Evan.
Yeah, yes. Something's going around. Everybody's getting sick.
I haven't gotten it yet.
Neither have I. So
knock on wood.
Fingers crossed, knock on wood.
Yeah, everything. All the superstitious stuff. But
it's sports.
Yeah.
So we're allowed to be superstitious.
Yeah. But speaking of sports and all that, this weekend was really good. And in spite of the fact that Utah State got crushed, I still came out of the weekend in a good mood.
And why is that?
Well, first off, just the NFL weekend was really good. There were a lot of good games. I was actually able to watch the Broncos-Panthers game. Oh. I also watched some Monday Night Football. The Panthers-Broncos game was better than both the Monday Night Football games combined, though. And then there were a lot of good games on Sunday, and then my Patriots won Sunday night. So that's going to put me in a good mood no matter what. And both my fantasy teams won. So I went.
So it's just. Yeah. I was sweeping the boards here, I guess, this weekend.
I went 3-for-4. That's 3-for-5 if you count my alma mater high school team, which lost. But there's a lot of stuff that we're going to go over today. We're going to start off with Utah State and, you know, the fact they lost. We'll talk about why and some of the implications, and then also go into their game against Arkansas State. And there's, again, not a whole lot to talk about. It's kind of like when they played Weber. Their Utah State is expected to win. But let's get into that right now. We have Utah State against USC. There's a lot of hope going into the game. If you listen to the pregame show that I was a part of with a few of the guys, we seemed hopeful that Utah State would at least be in this game. None of us picked Utah State to win the game. I don't think anybody did, besides a couple of people who wanted to pick an upset.
Yeah, unless you're like diehard.
Yeah,
blind
you're a diehard
in favor.
Yeah, and you really thought that Utah State was really good.
Yeah.
But Utah State basically got the treatment that they handed out to Weber State, and that USC got from Alabama. So there's almost this descending line of you suck compared to me. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I mean, yeah, I didn't think they were probably gonna win either, but I was sort of hoping that they would have capitalized on just, I mean, it, obviously it was Weber State, but at least just a good start to the season. And then USC starting off poorly, at least, kind of hoping they could capitalize on that, but I guess that just never happened.
Yeah, it never did, and all the things that you saw that were good from Utah State against Weber didn't really materialize. The running game, it wasn't there. You look at Devontae Mays, 8 carries for 24 yards. Most people were saying if Utah State was going to win this game, he would have to carry the team, perhaps get close to 100 yards and be pretty efficient. Kent Myers did have an okay day. Looking at his stats, he's 25 for 37, 204 yards, touchdown, and a pick. Those aren't bad numbers. Yeah. They can win you a game if you've got some help around you or if it's just a low-scoring game in general. But when USC is putting up 45 points, that ain't getting you nowhere.
Yeah.
And really, the implication, and like I said, I touched on this earlier, is that what this says, unfortunately for Aggie fans, is that Utah State's just not in the same category as the Power 5 conference schools. Even though USC's middle of the pack, they might be looking at being one of the contenders for the Pac-12, but they're not the cream of the crop of the Pac-12. Hmm. and Utah State got killed by him. And USC basically got shown the same thing by Alabama. It says, you are not a top-tier team. Get out of here. That's what they got showed on week one by the powerhouse Alabama, and USC basically said the same thing to Utah State. For now, you belong in the Mountain West Conference, be a mid-major team. A good year for you is going to be, what, 9-3 and a bowl win. So I guess 10-3. And that's the unfortunate truth. May not like it, but for now, that's what we got to work with.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. It's just there's not too much to say. It was just kind of a general, just they shut us down.
Yeah, really.
They got the job done. They took care of business, and you know, I don't know how much.
Yeah, there is nothing really to say about it, and neither is there really a whole lot to say about Utah State versus Arkansas State. It's basically one of those games where Utah State is expected to blow out or at least dominate Arkansas State. The Arkansas State Red Wolves, if I can talk. They're 0-2. And let me pull up the teams that they played.
I thought Auburn was the last team they played.
Yeah, they've played, I believe that's Toledo and Auburn. So, and they lost by...
Should have been Toledo, but...
let me see if that is Toledo. It says T-O-L.
Yeah, I think that it's a Rocket logo, right?
Yeah, it's Toledo. And they lost 31-10 to Toledo and 51-14 against Auburn. Yeah. Not exactly intimidated by Arkansas State.
Yeah, that plus two, just looking at some of the numbers, you look at the kind of the head-to-head matchup, and really Arkansas State lacks where the Aggies aren't doing too bad, which is, I would put it on rushing here. Arkansas State lets in a lot of yards per game, or at least they have so far in this season. They've let in a lot of points, obviously a lot of points that way too, and that's just another way that the Aggies can just run them over. Is, I think, rushing this week is the key to that.
Yeah, we could possibly see a sort of repeat of Utah State versus Weber, except probably not as lopsided running, because one of the reasons, and it's been touched on before, that Utah State didn't throw the ball as much against Weber State was because of weather. It was really windy, and obviously when you're blowing a team out, you're not going to throw the ball as much, you know, towards the end of the game anyway. Funny thing, I feel like they threw the ball more at the end of the game. Maybe it's because it got less windy. But overall, that's what you're looking at as far as Utah State. So right now, Utah State will hopefully go up 2-1 against, or overall, hopefully beating Arkansas State, if they don't fall flat on their faces. And then really the next big game, and this is one of those games where, okay, it's actually going to be one of those games where, you know, they're playing Air Force. I'll just say that right now so you know what I'm talking about. This would be a game where you're not entirely sure who's going to win. You'd hope the Aggies would win to show they're actually a good team.
Yeah.
It's at home. And I need to pull up Air Force. Last year, Air Force beat Utah State, didn't they? I'm trying to remember. It was a close game.
Honestly, I can't remember, but...
I know I'm looking at the ESPN page right now, and Air Force is actually favored. 52.5% to Utah State, 47.5% in the matchup predictor thing.
So it should be a good game.
Yeah.
Either way.
So hopefully Utah State can stop them. Air Force is a more of a rushing team, I believe. Yeah, they're definitely a rushing team. The quarterback's 8 of 19, and that's over two games.
Maybe if the defense can get some interceptions off this guy. Maybe
interceptions off the three passes he throws in the entire game.
Just hoping those 21 points can help us coast to the rest of the game. But, yeah, I mean, I really hope they find their stuff just to kind of get back on track. You know, it's conference opponent coming up, it'd be great to just
get started
at least on conference play, on just get that solid performance down. So
yeah, it'll be really important. But moving on, we're going to move into our segment, Critical Condition. And this is where, in addition to being armchair champions, we get to be armchair doctors. We analyze or diagnose, perhaps even dissect sometimes.
And you don't need to go to medical school for this either.
Yeah, no medical school required.
Trust me, I'm a doctor.
Trust me, I'm a doctor. Random tangent, it's my dream to get a doctor degree just so I can say that.
Just to say that.
But back on track. Today's patient, Jeff Fisher. Yep. And for anybody who was unfortunate enough to watch the 49ers-Rams game, you understand exactly why Jeff Fisher is our patient today.
Yeah, that was not a great night.
No, it was not. And I had the unfortunate privilege of watching the game. It actually wasn't as bad as I'm making it out to be. The Rams' defense was somewhat impressive during the middle part of that game. But overall, the team was bad, and especially the offense. Yeah. I cannot begin to describe that offense. Utah State played better offense than the Rams did on Monday.
Well, I mean, you look at, like, something I was able to look up was their third down conversions. 3 for 15. I mean, that's not going to get you anywhere close to being in the game. I think 185 total yards, which that's not really impressive, I guess, in my opinion. Two interceptions and just in general poor rushing. So, it was kind of a offensive meltdown.
Yeah, and you can say a few things. They didn't have Jared Goff. I don't know how much he would have actually helped. A lot of this is just they didn't have a passing game. And so a lot of people, like Todd Gurley, is a running back. They're really happy about his potential. But Todd Gurley can't run the ball if they're playing 11 guys in the box.
True.
A slight exaggeration. True. But they were playing eight or nine guys in the box. Todd Gurley's not going anywhere, no matter what. He's not Barry Sanders. At least not yet. I don't know if anybody will be Barry Sanders.
At least get close. At least in the same universe as Barry Sanders.
But overall, for Jeff Fisher, when he first came to the Rams back in about 2012, he took the team from 2-14 the previous year, and they went 7-9, which is actually a really good swing. It's five games.
Yeah.
That's a couple more games you're budding playoff team. And so, obviously, fans are probably really excited, especially since at that time they had Sam Bradford. He was second, third-year quarterback, still that budding star that everyone was hoping for, former number one pick. But the problem is he hasn't done anything since that. He's had almost the same record every year. He's gone 7-9, 7-8-1, 6-10, 7-9, and now he's 0-1.
Sheesh. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of disappointing, especially – I was kind of excited for Jeff Fisher when he took the job, you know, after so long at Tennessee. It was kind of interesting to see him get a new start and see what he could do. Especially the first year improvement, I think, gave a lot of people, especially St. Louis fans, what were St. Louis fans, a lot of reason to hope. But
I'm all for consistency, but again, you got to make some improvement after that initial one. And his teams, when you look at it, they've almost gotten worse as far as production. You look at his first year, their offensive rank, he was ranked 23rd, which is better than when he took over.
Yeah.
Now, in 2015, was dead last. It was 32nd. And there was this slow progression towards that. His defense has done the same thing. His first season, it was 14. Next season, 15, 17, 23 last season. It just seems like these teams are slowly going downhill.
So I just wonder why that is, though. Because, I mean, that's just like – because, I mean, it started out looking like this was finally a rebuild for a team that had waited so long to even get back to contention. I don't know. Is it just like failing to give him the players that could really work in his system, or?
The thing is, from what I've been hearing, he's drafted a lot of offensive players, which is weird considering his offenses have been terrible. His defenses, I feel like, have been good. He's had, he has a good defensive line. And his, like I said, his defense on Monday didn't look that bad. And actually, if you look at it, when you look at his overall offensive numbers as far as points and yards, they actually went up for a little bit. And they kind of dropped off last season. The thing is that compared to the rest of the league, they're down. Okay. And so I don't really know what Jeff Fisher is doing to have his offenses, have less production. But giving him credit, he's had the same record almost every single year. And so really, Jeff Fisher just isn't getting the most out of his players.
Yeah.
And he's got to be on the hot seat. And he, there's probably people placing bets on when he's going to get fired this year. Because if the Rams keep looking like that,
oh yeah,
he's not staying very long.
Yes, I mean, even just looking at their next handful of games, I mean, coming up, they've got Seattle. A couple weeks later, Arizona. A couple weeks after that, not too bad Detroit Lions team. So, I mean, even in the next few games, it could be, you know.
Yeah, it could get ugly.
If they don't change something now, especially next week against Seattle, which may be just a foregone conclusion now that they'll lose to Seahawks, but something's got to change quick.
Yeah, cause if they're losing to the 49ers, this division is going to be really rough.
Yeah.
If you lose 28-0 to the 49ers, like I said, what are they going to do against Seattle or Arizona? Mm. Both playoff teams and top teams in the NFC. So Jeff Fisher, unfortunately, the diagnosis is not very good. You're probably going to get fired. It's terminal. So moving on, we're going to stay in the NFL. We're going to go over some of the games that we were so excited about. Because like I said, there were a lot of good things, a lot of really good games. The margin of victory, the average margin of victory, I calculated it on Sunday night, and it was just under 6 points, the average margin of victory. And if you excluded the Eagles' victory over the Browns, it was less than five. It was almost four, I think. And so there were a lot of close games. Most of them were decided by less than a field goal or touchdown.
A lot of potential for upsets as well.
And that is one of the things. There were a couple of teams, namely the Packers and the Seahawks, who they went down to the wire against teams you wouldn't really expect them to coming into the game. And start with Green Bay. Now, the thing is that the Packers didn't actually look bad. This wasn't like when Tennessee played Appalachian State. They actually looked good. Their defense was good. The offense was pretty smooth. Aaron Rodgers had a relatively good game.
Yeah, and 27 points on that game for them. So
it was just that Jacksonville looked better than they were last season. And so really this was a good sign for just about anybody in that game. Now obviously as a Packers fan, you're hoping that you would beat a team like Jacksonville a little better.
Yeah.
Considering Jacksonville is a borderline playoff team, that's what kind of the knee-jerk reaction is based off this game. And that's one of the things about week one is right now we're working off our knee-jerk reactions, just one game of seeing how these teams play. That's all we got so far. But Jacksonville does look better. Maybe they can challenge for the division in the AFC South, which may end up looking a lot like the NFC East usually is, as far as mediocre teams fighting to win a division.
Who's the least mediocre out of four teams?
And so if Jacksonville turns out to be as good as they looked against the Packers, they'll be in that race. And so I really hope Jacksonville does better. I have a soft spot for them, mainly because they've sucked. But I have a soft spot for some teams randomly. But overall, I think Jacksonville has a lot of young talent. At the beginning of the season, I didn't think they'd go very far, but that they'd take a step forward and then ideally take another step forward as Blake Bortles gets better and they have a bunch of young names on defense as well. and some young people on offense too. Any thoughts on the Packers or Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, I think it may have been more of a sign of Jacksonville's progress as opposed to very much that lacks with the Packers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, pretty good game, 2 touchdown passes, 200 yards. I mean, it's not, you know, not bad. Let's see. So I think it may just be that Jacksonville is gelling together as opposed
they're better, and so it produced a better game.
Yeah. So I don't think it's so much to worry about if you're a Packers fan. I just think it's a young team coming together.
So. And it's encouraging for Jacksonville. So another, excuse me, I'm a little dehydrated. Another game that was similar is the Seahawks and the Dolphins. And this one isn't as much as the Packers and Jacksonville as far as both teams were just good. Seattle, I feel like, seemed to struggle a little bit. They were at home as opposed to Green Bay being on the road. And given that Russell Wilson was injured in the third quarter, although still they were only up 6-3 at that point, something to worry about for Seattle, in my opinion, is their offense. In past years, their offense has actually been one of the best. Top 5 or top 10, at least, usually. Mm. But that was largely a part of their really good running game. They were always top 5 running. And that really carried their offense because the passing game has usually been in the 20s. In fact, it has been.
Yeah.
That's what's been the past few years. In spite of Russell Wilson being a good, smart quarterback and able to make plays, they don't move the ball through the air a ton.
Hmm.
And that hasn't been a problem because their offense has always been good and their defense has always been superb. And so they've been able to win games. But now, Marshawn Lynch is gone. And if you look at the game against the Dolphins, Thomas Rawls, I think is how you say his name. I've never heard anybody actually say his name. I've just seen it written down. He had a poor game. Last year, he showed a lot of flashes of being Marshawn Lynch's clear, what do you call it? I'm totally spacing.
Successor.
Yeah. Vocabulary fail. He looked really good overall in the season. He had 800 yards. He ended up having injury that ended his season. But in the first game against the Dolphins, he looked absolutely dreadful. 12 carries, 32 yards. That's 2.7 yards per attempt. He did have 3 receptions for 26 yards, but still. That's not a whole lot.
Yeah, and I don't think it got better even with their rushing leader for that game, Kristen Michael.
Kristen Michael.
Kristen is
a girl's name.
Yeah, yeah, and he didn't, not phenomenally better. I mean, at 66 yards for 15 carries, I mean, it doesn't get much better really from there.
It's good, and for a 12-10 game, that's not bad.
Yeah, I mean. I mean, just looking at some of the scoring, Seahawks finally put it in their favor very late in that fourth quarter. So, I mean, it was definitely no room for relief or even to kind of catch your breath for that. But
yeah, it was a close game all the way. And Ryan Tannehill, when he led that touchdown drive towards the end, it put a lot of pressure on the Seahawks. And you know, give credit to the Seahawks. I'm not saying they played horrible in this game because they did come out on top. And Russell Wilson injured by an ankle injury that he got in the third quarter. He led a game-winning drive. And so you got to give credit to a team that leads a game-winning drive to win the game in the NFL. Because unlike in college football, where there's such a vast talent difference between the top-tier teams and the lower-tier teams, the NFL, any team can beat any other team any given Sunday. And you see examples of this every year, especially in week 1 when you're not entirely sure who's good or not. because some teams do make major jumps. But, and that's one of the things that made the Rams 49ers game so bad. To get shut out in the NFL is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because you should at least score points on one of your 12 or so drives.
Yeah, I mean, if... Yeah, not a great way to start trying to build that fan base down in L.A. But
yeah.
Which, kind of on a side note, I don't know why that game wasn't played in L.A. I mean, if you think it's the first Monday Night Football back in, like, 20-something years, I don't know. That's just a side note on my part. I thought it should have been played in L.A.
Whatever.
Anywho.
So, moving on to the next game. Well, here's the interesting game. We actually get something interesting. The Broncos against the Panthers. The opening game of the NFL season, and my oh my, it did not disappoint.
And not without some controversy as well.
Of course not. What is the NFL without controversy? Yeah. So, the controversy, for those of you who've been living under a rock, was, or is, a lot of the hits that Cam Newton took during the game. And I was watching the game. I watched about every single play, and I was paying attention quite intently towards the end because of how good of a game it was.
Yeah.
I got a little lax when I was watching the 49ers-Rams game. I started to multitask.
I think everybody did. Well, time for homework.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But Cam Newton took several hits, especially towards the head. That was the part that people were saying were illegal. And they said the refs missed these illegal plays, and they did call a personal foul on one of them. And maybe I'm a little old-fashioned. I'm more on the side of I'm not that upset about some of them because, to me, yes, there was helmet-to-helmet contact on them. There's no question about it. He got hit in the head, and one of them got hit pretty hard. Yeah. But there was one who was in Von Miller sacked, or no, well, somebody else, DeMarcus Ware sacked Cam Newton, and Von Miller came in at the end, and he ended up hitting him in the head. But Von Miller was straight up. He just happened to hit him in the head.
Yeah.
It's two tall guys hitting each other.
It's not like he's torpedoing into the
Yeah, and the two that I was watching, and there were more than just two hits. There were some others. But the two hits I saw, they weren't illegal in my mind. Yes, there was helmet-to-helmet contact, but that happens. Mm. Offensive and defensive linemen smack helmets every play. It happens. Yeah. Especially the one towards the end, the biggest one, Cam Newton lowered his head. He was, you can't see me doing this, he was... Yeah. Curling up.
So in that case, it was on him.
Yeah, it was more on him, and I'm not, you know, I'm not saying it's his fault because it's a natural reaction. He was bracing himself for what he knew was going to be a big hit, and the guy coming in, he wasn't. I can't say he was entirely leading with his shoulder. He was somewhat leading with his head, and so there was some fault in the defender. But you can tell he wasn't torpedoing Cam Newton, saying, "I'm going to bust your brains."
Yeah, because I can imagine if you're bracing yourself. I mean. You're kind of almost putting your ear to your shoulder, kind of.
Yeah, that's basically what he was doing.
So I can see where it is hard to judge, you know, whether a hit has crossed the line, given that that's, like you said, just the natural reaction. I think everybody would brace themselves like that, even if you're on defense.
Yeah, and so people do that. And I'm not as familiar with the targeting rules and the helmet-to-helmet rules. And the NFL, they actually fined those two hits. And so according to the NFL, those should have been penalized in some form or fashion. And so I guess that's the way the NFL sees it. Because if the rule is just that if that helmet-to-helmet contact occurs, then there needs to be a penalty. First off, that's kind of weird. Yeah. Because unintentional helmet-to-helmet, I don't think should be penalized.
Yeah, and the time I've seen that actually called, it's it seems to be more of... He's like pouncing into the guy the way.
Yeah, he's leading with his head.
Yeah, the way, like, for lack of a better word, like a ram, the animal would.
Yeah,
you know, butt ram heads with their heads. With what, whoever was fighting.
And I didn't see those with either of the hits. Like I said, Von Miller, he was straight up, and they like bumped face masks practically. That are the side of Cam Newton's head. But neither I felt were malicious. They were more incidental than anything.
Yeah.
And yes, the hit on Cam Newton towards the end was a big hit, but it's football.
Yeah.
Please, people. And yes, he was hurt, but it was a big hit. It hurts to get hit like that.
Yeah, and I would even say a part of, if there is blame for anything that happened, I think a part of it does go to the Carolina training staff, the staff that was took a look at him and put him back in the game, and then went on to complain that he was getting hit in the head. I think if you thought it was that bad or that dangerous, you're the one checking him out. You know, you're the one giving him the test. You know, I think that was their call to make. If they wanted to bring him out because of their concern, they could have done that. I mean, obviously they wanted to win. I get that. But a part of it is it's Carolina's call. I mean, it's their deal if they're not going to bring someone out after being so concerned about them.
Yeah. And he did pass all of the concussion protocol and stuff like that. So, like I said, according to them, they thought he was good. Yeah. But that wasn't the only big part of the game. There was a lot else to be excited about. One of the big things coming in was Trevor Siemian, the quarterback who surprisingly won the quarterback job over Paxton Lynch, and also Mark Sanchez, who they brought in. I thought Mark Sanchez was going to end up being the starter, but he failed.
Yeah.
In butt fumble.
Yeah, I think that was my thought, too. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so Trevor Siemian looked pretty impressive. I was impressed. He passed the eyeball test that I have. He has a really quick release.
18 for 26. Yeah. So.
A solid game and led his team to a win.
Yeah.
Although, I will say this, C.J. Anderson was probably more of the driving force behind that.
Yeah, I mean, there were two interceptions from Siemian as well. And
yeah. So. Although I believe one of those was a tip ball at the line of scrimmage behind the line of scrimmage. Either way, he did throw two interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, and then the Broncos did get the 14 points in the last quarter, too, to really.
Yeah, they did have that comeback, and that was after Cam Newton had taken some of those hits. That was one of the storylines, was that Cam Newton didn't play nearly as well in the second half. He seemed like he was rattled up. Because in the first half, the Panthers' offense, I believe, scored 17 points in the first half. And their offense looked really good. And I thought the Panthers were going to win the game. I was like, they looked really good. But it was a tale of two halves because the Broncos came out and looked pretty impressive in the second half, defensively and offensively.
Yeah, that was my guess, too, just going back to what I was thinking before the game started. I was going to give it to Carolina as well just because I thought, well, Denver's in kind of a transitional quarterback situation, and I think Cam Newton would be more than ready to avenge the Super Bowl, but yeah, got to hand it to Denver there. They're still the team they were, you know.
Yeah, that was one of the things that going into the season, a lot of guys like me, other media outlets, some of the people I listened to, they were saying the Broncos are going to take a step back because of their quarterback woes, I guess, their quarterback situation. You know, they had Mark Sanchez, Paxton Lynch, and this Trevor Siemian guy. I mean, people weren't exactly high on the Denver Broncos, and also they lost a few players on defense. But like you said, they came out, played well. They've proven guys like me wrong. So, moving on, some of the other games that were pretty good. The Patriots versus the Cardinals. This was the game that I had my eyes on because I'm a big Patriots fan. And I wasn't really expecting the Patriots to win. Most people weren't. The Patriots were without Tom Brady, obviously. We've known that for months. They're also without Rob Gronkowski, arguably their second best player. And they're also without Nate Solder, their left tackle. So that wasn't exactly a good recipe for victory for the Patriots. But Jimmy Garoppolo comes in, has a solid game. They didn't ask a whole lot of him. But he did really well. The run game wasn't superb in that game. And so Jimmy Garoppolo had to carry the team more than the Patriots coaching staff would have wanted to have him carry the team. You could tell they wanted to establish the run, and it just wasn't working. So I believe LeGarrette Blount got about 22 carries in that game, which is a lot. But the Patriots eventually did win. It took a missed field goal by the Cardinals to do it. But ultimately, the Cardinals should have won this game.
Oh, yeah.
They were at home against a team missing its best players. like two or three of their better players.
Yeah. Two passing touchdowns from Carson Palmer, and I think both were to Larry Fitzgerald, and also a rushing touchdown. And Palmer getting 271 passing yards. So, I mean, it was not a bad night for them. I mean, it's just two really good teams going at it, you know?
Well, the thing is, the Cardinals coaching staff and others really went off on the team afterwards. I just thought of... was it the Cardinals against the Bears? It was the Bears against the Cardinals.
Yeah, it was at Arizona. The Monday night game where they...
Yeah, we let them off the hook.
Yeah, it was like they were up by like 20 at halftime. Yeah. I remember watching that game, actually.
We let them off the hook.
Oh, Coach Rants are the best, though, in the NFL.
Iconic. Playoffs? Playoffs. Anyway, back to present NFL football. Now, the Cardinals, they're expected to be one of the top teams in the NFC, and they really laid an egg. Hmm. Now, this isn't spelling doom and gloom for the Cardinals because, again, the Patriots are the top team in the AFC. So this isn't the worst loss in the world. And they did put themselves in a position. Carson Palmer, or I should say Larry Fitzgerald, was absolutely clutch. Hmm. He came through on that last drive. He was willing the Cardinals to a victory, which ultimately... Well, it was the second to last drive when they scored the touchdown. But he was, or was the last drive, like last two drives. He really wanted the Cardinals to win, and Larry Fitzgerald is just a beast.
Oh, yeah.
But
I don't know. I will say it was slow getting started for the Cardinals, and that may have been what ultimately decided this game, because at the end of the first quarter, 10-0 Patriots. So... I think maybe in this case it was more an issue of timing where Arizona just got started too late. I mean, because you look at the last three quarters, you know, they either – I think the third quarter they both scored 7 points. But other than that, in quarters two and four, Cardinals scored more.
Yeah.
And I think it was only by one in the fourth quarter. But I just think it may have just been that slow start that tipped this. So.
Well, one thing that did go in the Cardinals' favor is the Patriots coming out of halftime. They were up 10-7 going into half. They come out, they get the ball, they go up 17-7. Hmm. And then they stop the Cardinals, and the Patriots get the ball back. They're moving, and then they turn the ball over. Hmm. Cardinals go down and score. That was something, if that hadn't happened, I don't know if the game would have even been as close as it was. If the Patriots had gone down, maybe even gotten some sort of kind of points out of that drive, they would have been up 24-7, 20-7. It could have spelled doom for the Patriots in that game or the Cardinals in that game then. But they did catch a break. And giving credit to them, they added the spark where they did come back and take the lead and, again, almost win the game. So, other than that, there weren't a ton of, you might say, relevant games as far as the contenders. You did have a couple of interesting games. One interesting game that highlighted in our last show was Cincinnati versus the Jets. This is one of those games where it's going to be later in the season, wild card race, spots, race for the wild card spots, Cincinnati and Jets. Cincinnati, they're probably going to end up behind Pittsburgh in the division. Jets, probably behind the Patriots. And so they're going to be the team that's fighting for the wild card spots. Maybe they'll just both win both the wild card spots, but they could end up finding each other. Yeah. And so in this game with Cincinnati beating the Jets, you know, could be really big. So they end up with the same record, and it also could matter with seeding. Then Cincinnati is going to have that hand over the Jets.
Yeah. And I will say another game though, that I was watching that I really liked was San Diego at Kansas City. I think Kansas City shows a lot of promise, just in the team that they're bringing together. And I think they showed that. I mean, kind of a rusty start. Obviously, you don't go down 17 points doing the right things. But coming back from a 17-point deficit and taking it and winning it in overtime, I think shows a lot of what that team is capable of. I'm liking the AFC West in terms of teams, I mean, other than just the Broncos
getting
better. And I think even San Diego, who's not – I would say out of the four teams, they're probably the least competitive this year. But, you know, I'm just liking that whole division. I think that's all moving up. So,
yeah, because you do have the Broncos, obviously, who look to be one of the top five teams in the AFC. The Chiefs, they're kind of a dark horse team to be pretty good. Interesting fact, they've won like, I want to say 10 or 11, 11 or 12 of the last games they've had without Jamal Charles. The one game they lost was against the Patriots. They won 10 straight to end the season last year, won their first playoff game, lost against the Patriots, come back, win their first game.
And I think that's just
Jamal Charles.
Yeah, and I think that's just going to be their big question mark for the Chiefs, because I think they'll make the playoffs. But I think the issue is the playoffs, you know, because it took them like, what, 20 years to get there, you know, between playoff wins. But I think also in the AFC West, you got the Raiders, an up-and-coming young team.
Yeah, that was another game that was nice, is you had the Raiders beating New Orleans. And if you're a resident of Utah, which I'm sure most of you are listening to this show, that game had a familiar ring to it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Two-point conversion, except there was a difference in this one as opposed to the one in that one college game over the weekend. And it's an example of what happens with these kind of calls, because with BYU, a lot of people criticize. I was looking on Twitter, and a lot of people were okay with the decision. But if you don't make it, you're a villain. If you make it, you're the hero. Just contrast the two games.
And if you punch other players in the crotch, they pretend like they didn't see it. That's the other thing about BYU fans. I'm sorry, but they have a tendency to not see that when the rest of us saw it.
Hashtag Thug Mormon.
Thug Mormon.
That's still the best thing to come out of that.
No, I love the after they played Boise State, there was a meme that came out showing the punch to the groin, and it said, when your balls are bluer than your field. that's one of my favorites of all time. But
wow.
Not to take us too far off down the rabbit hole.
Anyway, but, going back, Detroit and Indianapolis, the one thing I'm getting out of this game is Andrew Luck one day is going to break his back. You know why?
Why?
He's carrying Indianapolis on his back by himself.
Yeah, not winning even after scoring 35 points. I mean,
he needs a defense. He needs an offensive line. They are trying. They did bring in some offensive line people, so we know they're trying.
Yeah, but, and I mean, yeah, and the Lions aren't what they were a few years ago either. I mean, they've been kind of rebuilding too, but still, scoring 35 points and not winning.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You can't do that. You got to have some semblance of defense.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the amazing things is why Andrew Luck is really good, in my opinion, is because he's really the only great player on that team. There's a number of good players on that team. Look at T.Y. Hilton, other guys. Guys capable of making the Pro Bowl on good years. But Andrew Luck's the only great player on that team. And if you want to be a playoff team, you got to have multiple great players. Look at any of these contending teams. Multiple great players. The Patriots, obviously Tom Brady, Gronkowski. There's some guys on the defense. You look at Pittsburgh, you have Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, who they torched the Washington Redskins. You go through Green Bay, you've got Aaron Rodgers, obviously, some of his wide receivers, some defensive players. You got to have a lot of great players and then more good players. And Indianapolis doesn't have that. And so
that's a heavy load to carry.
Yes, it is.
I do not envy him at all at this point.
So that's about it for the NFL. Look at some of the Week 2 matchups. I know the Thursday night game, I believe, is the Bills versus the Jets. And that's a game. I have LeSean McCoy on one of my fantasy teams. I benched him.
Wow.
He's playing the Jets defense. Have you seen that front seven? It's ridiculous. And that's one of the things with, it's Jets, Buffalo, Bills. The Bills need to learn how to throw the ball. And this last game, they lost 13-7 to the Ravens. They can't just rely on the running game, because last year, the running game, I believe, was ranked number one as far as total yards. I mean, Tyrod Taylor's a good running quarterback. LeSean McCoy is Shady McCoy. We can leave it at that. And so you've got some good pieces in the running game. But if you go up against a team like the Jets, and I guess against Baltimore too, if they stop the run, LeSean McCoy had 58 yards last game. If you can't establish the run, and it's kind of like with the Rams, if you can't establish a good running game, you're not going anywhere. And so with the Jets, who they gave up 366 yards to Andy Dalton, but I don't see Tyrod Taylor being as good as Andy Dalton. And if Darrell Revis has any sort of comeback game from last game, he's going to shut down Sammy Watkins, which is also why I benched him, and I have him too. Oh. At least I think I benched him.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know if I had any other better receivers. But
yeah, I mean, there's some good games coming up. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's a game to look forward to.
Yeah, I think in my opinion, I've got Pittsburgh taking that one. Just due to the rushing factor, I think. All yeah. things considered, they edge out.
Yeah, and they're at home too. Some other close games that may not be the most world-beating games. I'd look at. I just had my eye on a couple of them. Kansas City and Houston. Yeah. Oakland and Atlanta, I think, will be an interesting game. I just want to keep my eye on Derek Carr. That guy intrigues me. And last game, Atlanta, their passing game was really good, but basically nothing else was. So we'll see how Oakland does. An interesting rematch, Green Bay and Minnesota. Week 17 last season, Minnesota beats Green Bay, goes to the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. We'll also see if Sam Bradford makes a cameo for the Vikings. In week one, obviously, probably hasn't learned the playbook, really needs to get used to the system, so you can understand why he didn't start that game.
Yeah, definitely another team with still figuring out its quarterback situation.
So he'll figure it out. We'll see if he manages to get in week two. I'd understand if he doesn't make it then, but by week three, you'd expect him to be in there.
Yeah, and I would also say, like, one more thing on that, I don't feel like Vikings fans should have been worried even when they lost
Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, their regular starting quarterback. So I think their team is, thankfully, they've built more pieces than just their quarterback. So I don't think they have too much to fear, although, you know, quarterback is key.
Yeah, it is
at least
important.
In terms of leadership and direction. So,
yeah, and they won their game, and in the surprise of the week for me, Adrian Peterson ran for 30-something yards. Mm-hmm. They win the game by 9 points.
Yeah,
mostly because of their defense.
So if he comes back, you know,
if Adrian Peterson has any sort of a good game, and they have that great defense, obviously they're not going to score another two defensive touchdowns. Although if they do. Green Bay, you can now thank me because I just jinxed it. They probably won't have that, but if they play any sort of defense like they did in the last game, then they'll take on Green Bay pretty well. So that's about it for NFL. I really want to get into college before we finish things up here. We're going a little while. But there's... Unlike week two of college football, which was entirely unexciting for everybody, including Utah State fans, especially after that blowout loss, week three plans to be really exciting. And I found out a really cool fact, just surfing the interwebs. I saw it on ESPN, there's a video. This is the first time in AP Top 25 poll history that number one, number two, and number three will play true road games. Not neutral site games, but true road games against top 25 opponents.
Oh, wow.
So, some exciting tests for all three top 25, or all three of the top teams. Alabama will play Ole Miss. Interesting fact, Ole Miss has won the last two matchups against Alabama.
Ooh, that could be some giant killer. I think there might be a giant killer this week.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at some of the other games, like Florida State and Louisville.
Yeah, that is can't miss that game. That is a game that you've got to keep your eye on. Because that's the closest as far as rankings.
Yeah. And even that, the spread within three for that
game. Yeah, just really close game. So hopefully it's not this disappointing blowout that I feel like we tend to see in these big games where it's all hyped up and then it's a 50-20 game. And Lamar Jackson, who right now a lot of people have as the Heisman frontrunner after a spectacular first couple of weeks, albeit against not very good competition. But now he's going to get his first real test. If he leads Louisville to a win over Florida State, you got to think he's in the driver's seat, and it's the Heisman would be his to lose at that point, which is very likely to happen.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the front runner in week three usually doesn't win it.
Yeah. Another matchup that could be really close, Ohio State, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
That looking at it, I think, can be anybody's game.
Yeah, like I said, all three of these games could go to either one. Yeah. I mean, the one that I might be leaning more towards one is Alabama and Ole Miss. Yeah. But Ole Miss apparently has history behind them.
Yeah, that I did not know that streak. That's
They're probably the only team with that streak right now.
Makes it all the more interesting, actually. So I guess I know what I'm doing all this weekend. Not leaving the house.
Yeah, watch all these games. So Oklahoma, obviously, they're going to try and get back into the playoff race after losing to Houston.
Yeah, it's at Oklahoma.
Yeah, so. All these games are away from where three teams are. And so that'll make it – that's why it's such a big test for all of these teams, at least on the top three side. And so it'll be really interesting to watch. And that's so exciting. I hate week two. Week three is awesome. A couple other – I guess one storyline to look at is Clemson. They're not looking so hot right now. And I need to pull up who they're playing. But Deshaun Watson, at the beginning of the season, I know at least one person, I listened to a lot of Colin Cowherd, and he basically declared Deshaun Watson the next coming of Andrew Luck as far as can't miss prospect.
Yeah, he was my Heisman.
Yeah, he was a lot of people's Heisman
this year. So.
And he's not done a whole lot. He's not been super impressive. And through two games, he hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been the Deshaun Watson that everybody's been looking for.
Yeah, so apparently Clemson is taking on South Carolina State.
They're not very impressive, are they? I feel like I've never heard of them.
Yeah, I keep picturing in my mind South Carolina, but that's
not. Yeah, I keep thinking Jadeveon Clowney.
Because it's like similar colors here. No. Matchup predictor on ESPN. 99.7% for Clemson.
Yeah, I think we know who's going to win that game.
So, they don't even – oh, wow, they don't – season leaders, they don't even have South Carolina
They don't even
State's.
Have stats? Yeah, wow.
They don't even have stats. So, this – who has – South Carolina State, they've – last couple weeks, UCF and Louisiana Tech, both losses, both by pretty
good. Those aren't impressive losses.
Yeah, lost to UCF week one, 38-0.
Wow.
And then Louisiana Tech, 53-24. So.
So Clemson, you got your shot at redemption. Deshaun Watson, throw for 500 yards,
this
please.
This is your chance to like.
500 yards and 5 touchdowns in the first half.
You know, go. The football gods are handing him a chance to pad his resume for the Heisman this week.
This is your chance to be the passing leader in the NCAA, at least for 1 week, and possibly get ahead. Because Lamar Jackson's got your number right now.
This would be just a pure confidence booster. Like, all this would do for them is just get them back on.
Yay, scored 69,000 points.
It's like, you know, it's just going to ruin, like, season averages for next time we want to match up. Two teams, you know.
This is going to look like Utah State beat Weber State. All right, we're going against USC. Their running back is averaging 208 yards per game. Wow, that guy's good. We got to stop that guy.
Oh, man.
Really, really exciting stuff. So, another Heisman watch, you're looking at Christian McCaffrey. They're going up against USC. And so, again, USC is not the most impressive because we're staying in the Power 5. We're not comparing USC to Utah State. You know, Pac-12 matchup, we'll see if he can continue to do what he's been doing. He's a great running back. And a lot of people have him up high. I know the one I'm looking at right now, they have him at number two as far as Heisman, and I haven't looked at a ton of others to see where he's at. I know one that this website put San Diego State's Donald Pumphrey, so Mountain West shout out. They put him at number three.
Really?
Yeah. And I haven't looked at his stats. I know last season I did see his stats. They were extremely impressive. And so he's putting up similar ones this season.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a dark horse. I don't really see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think, like, the conference he's coming out of,
yeah,
I just think would be too much of a factor.
Yeah, and you can't do it. There's other ones. Ohio State's TJ Barrett, Oregon's Royce Freeman. You throw in another few. Houston, Greg Ward Jr., he was actually out last week because of a shoulder injury.
Wow, he's still talking about him, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's not his fault that
true
he had the injury, but that does hurt him because he misses a game.
Yeah.
And as unfair as that is, it hurts him. Mm-hmm. Albeit, they played Lamar, I believe it was. Nobody impressive.
Not exactly a panic.
Lamar is a town in Arkansas. Really? Little known fact, I've been there.
Ah.
Puny town. I know people I know people there, though. And if they're listening, they're probably not, but hello, everybody in Lamar, Arkansas.
Shout out to Lamar.
And that's not where Lamar College is from. There's barely a school in Lamar. But anyway, so that's about all we got. Do you have any last thoughts on college football or the NFL or anything you want to say?
I just kind of going back a little bit earlier, at least in the college world, I think there's going to be a giant killer this weekend. At least one.
Oh, there almost always is.
Yeah. There's going to be one, but my gut tells me maybe two. So we could be maybe seeing two. A decent shakeup.
You think Clemson's going to lose?
Well,
no. Giant killer.
Giant killer. Yeah, it's funny. I keep thinking South Carolina.
South Carolina State, the giant killers. We're making a movie out of it.
Just imagine the one person in Vegas who's betting on that, and some miracle it happens. How rich that person would get.
I'm a millionaire.
Instant
times
money.
Three.
But looking out for, I'll up it to two giant killers this week.
Two giant killers. All right, we're putting it on the books. Evan says
two
of them. Giant killers. But that's about all we got for this week. Again, there's a lot to be excited about. A lot happened last week that made everybody excited, and we're going to keep it on rolling because things are getting even better. The NFL is underway. College football is well underway. And life is good. The August lull is finally gone. Now we just got to wait for the NBA.
Yes.
And college basketball.
And the World Series.
Yeah, and that special moment, and I can't remember exactly when it is. It's sometime in October, either early or late October, where basically every professional sport is playing. NHL, MLB, NFL, NBA, even college football and college basketball, they're all going at the same time. It's the most beautiful time of year.
All the bookies in Vegas are just losing their minds.
It's just like, I can't stand it, but I love it because for that, it's only lasts about 1 week because you're on the tail end of Major League Baseball. But it's a beautiful time of year. Welcome to fall, everybody. And thank you for listening to Armchair Champions.